It has been a long and fervid run-up to today's midterm elections, and maybe you find yourself cheering the end of candidates, trading punches and robocalls, mailers, and nonstop political commercials. And perhaps you're wondering, has it always been like this, or were elections less contentious back in the day? The short answer, nope. We took a walk through Michigan's colorful election history with Detroit historian Mickey Lyons, who runs the blog ProhibitionDetroit.com. We sat down at our recent live show in Ann Arbor. So you're going to take us in the time machine, and we're going to go back. Let's go back first to 1896, when Hazen Pingree, Potato Patch Pingree, was elected governor. What went down then?
All right, so Hazen Pingree has consistently been voted one of the best mayors in American history. He is a god among mayors, truly is. But he was Detroit mayor and did a fantastic job at that. He then was elected governor of the state of Michigan. Being very good at his job, he decided, well, I can do both. And said, I can do both, right? And a bunch of people said, yeah, you can be mayor and governor at the same time. That's fine. And he took it all the way up to the state Supreme Court of Michigan. And the Supreme Court said, no, you can't do both. So you need to have a runoff election. And that's where things got a little bit weird.
What happened?
So he sort of hand-selected his replacement. And by this point, this is Republicans and Democrats fighting against each other.
Oh, surprise.
Yeah, right? Big business versus the little guy versus the unions. And as it turns out, Pingree's selected replacement just basically went campaigning and said, well, Pingree picked me, so vote for me, yay. And his opponent, William Cotter Mayberry, who just sort of happened to be kissing cousins with Henry Ford, was the opponent and said, vote for me. I'm a good guy. I kiss babies. I like business. Let's do this. So it turned into this thing between Pingree, who was formerly the big business opponent, really having to step back, and in the end, Pingree's chosen replacement lost.
Lost.
Yes.
You lost.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's as if Mike Duggan ran for governor and got elected and said, by the way, I want to still be Detroit's
right.
mayor.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Let's go further back in time. Hamtramck, 1840. Tell us about the Hamtramck affair.
The Hamtramck affair. It sounds so much more sordid and dirty, especially when you consider the fact that Hamtramck at the time was really everything east of the Renaissance Center and going northwards from there. So this is a great swath of territory in eastern Detroit. So in 1840, this is the Whigs versus the Democrats, because the Republican Party doesn't exist yet. And the ballot box for the state representative disappears.
Vanishes.
Well, it turns out the township clerk, Louis Moran, ran into his buddy, John Mack, who was the ballot inspector, and they decided to go to the tavern, like you do at the end of a very long election day. And they went to the tavern together, and they got very, very, very drunk. And the next morning, the ballot box for state representative turned up in the middle of the road, found by a merchant on his way to the market, destroyed with the ballots strewn about. So that was the Hamtramck affair. 334 ballots in all, completely lost and destroyed.
After a drunken night out.
Yes.
Which leads us to kind of touch on the role that alcohol and bartenders have played in politics in Southeast Michigan. And so what kind of role can we explore with that?
Back in the day, it's not hard to imagine, back in the day, your bartender was an integral part of your life. He taught you how to vote. He was your banker. He was your confidant. He was your confessor. He was your friend. And your bar life was your social life. So the people that owned the big taverns were really not only socially influential, but also politically influential, because you also cashed your paycheck there, you did your grocery shopping at the bar. All of life was pretty much at the bar.
So there were some powerful saloon keepers, right? There's, John Gillespie, Patty McGraw, Billy Bouchaw?
Billy Bouchaw, the foist of the foist. He was the alderman, so the ward captain for the first ward, first precinct. So this is, again, down on the Riverside, Lower East Side of Detroit, the foist of the foist. And he was in charge of collecting all of the ballots and calling and marking the ballots. And he also was very, very good at making sure that plenty of people registered their residence, their primary residence, at his tavern, which had two bedrooms. But come election day, it had at least 175 lodgers.
Ah.
Yes.
Okay. What about John Gillespie?
John Gillespie was actually, so far as I can tell, he never held a publicly elected office. But he really knew how to work the system. He was campaign manager for mayors of note, and he figured out how to buy votes, which was essentially trade jobs for votes. So you couldn't necessarily just hand over wads of cash for votes, but if you're, say, in charge of public works, then if certain people show up on one side on hiring day and certain other people show up on another side on hiring day, and a voting boss gives you the nod, then you know who to hire. So John Gillespie pretty much worked the system through all of his career.
And Paddy McGraw.
Paddy McGraw. Paddy McGraw was a good old-fashioned Irishman. He played the fiddle. He ran a brothel at the Hamtramck Detroit border.
Are we talking late 1800s?
Late 1800s up into the early 1900s, about to 1920s or so. Prohibition pretty much killed poor Paddy McGraw's business. But he was influential. He was the person for miles and miles around, and he had all of the influence with the voting and who you talked to and who you did business with.
Now, we wanted to talk about a gold medal. If you want to talk about Olympic medals, this is a gold medal level of political corruption. So take us back in your time machine to 1930 and Detroit Mayor Charles Bowles. What kind of scoundrel was Mayor Bowles?
You know, the kind of scoundrel that I really, really, really wish I could find some reason to like him, and I just can't. There's nothing redeeming about this man. He is the only Detroit mayor to ever have been recalled from public office in the history of mayors of Detroit. It took 9 months to get there, so that's how bad a guy he was. And it was 1930, so it was Prohibition and the Depression. That's how bad he was. He was elected into office essentially on the backing of the Ku Klux Klan. After several attempts.
Well, there's a great calling card right there.
Yeah, yeah.
So what was he like and what was his campaign like? Why was he such a scoundrel?
Well, he first tried for it in 1924. And that's when the KKK really kind of started taking over Southeast Michigan. And he had a lot of backing. There was a runoff election because somebody had stepped down. And he came really close and didn't quite make it. He was what they called a sticker candidate. And a sticker candidate, this is some of the vocabulary that they used to have for voting back in the day. Like we say hanging chads, they said sticker candidates. So he was a write-in candidate, but his people would hand out stickers. And one of his opponents in one of the elections for mayor was Mayor John Smith. And his people and his people who backed him managed to convince the voters that John Smith was not his real name and he might have spelled his name wrong. So here, take this sticker and vote for Charles Bowles.
Mm.
Yeah.
And you were saying, what launch? So there was a recall election.
Yes.
Because he gets into office and what's he like?
So phenomenally corrupt that no one really knows even how to track it. You know, the reporters are aghast. They don't know how to figure out all of the gambling rings. And there's a brothel/gambling ring that you can see from his window of his office at City Hall. It's that corrupt. Yeah.
You know, when you think of the footprint of history and things that you dig in and you find and you write about at ProhibitionDetroit.com, how does that inform the way you look at politics today?
Good and bad. I think taking a long view of it, you know, a 180-year-long view of it, in the end, we're still here and life isn't too bad. So, you know, if corruption is that rampant and that ridiculous 100 years ago, then we're doing things all right.
We survived.
Yeah.
A walk through the history of political shenanigans and trickery in Michigan history with Detroit historian Mickey Lyons. You can check out her blog at prohibitiondetroit.com. Thank you so much. It's always fun talking history with you.
Thank you, Cynthia.